Welcome to the AI Business Podcast, where we feature conversations with interesting guests at the intersection of artificial intelligence and business.
Hi, welcome everybody to the AI Business Podcast. Today I'm joined by Peter Shen of Siemens Health Engineers. Today we're talking about AI in healthcare. Welcome, Peter. Why don't you start by giving us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Siemens.
Yeah, thanks so much, Andrew. Pleasure to be here. So my name is Peter Shen. I'm the head of digital and automation here in North America for Siemens Healthineers. So myself and my team, we're focused on all things digital as it relates to healthcare, with a particular interest in new and emerging technologies and platforms like artificial intelligence. I think many people know about Siemens and Siemens Healthineers. We're a large medical technology company that's been around for over 170 years and actually have over 18,000 different patents globally. We're a group of 65,000 dedicated colleagues in over 70 countries, and we continue to innovate and shape the future of healthcare. Roughly an estimated about 5 million patients globally every day benefit from our innovation technologies and services in the area of diagnostics or therapeutic imaging, laboratory diagnostics, and molecular medicine as well.
Oh, that's great. Thanks for that. So, you know, looking at the topic of AI in healthcare, you know, how would you characterize sort of the current state, if you will, or the current state of adoption in healthcare today?
Yeah, it's a great question, Andrew, because I think as you're aware of and your listeners are aware of, AI has been something that's created a lot of excitement here in healthcare over the last few years. And I think a lot of folks are really excited about the potential that AI has to maybe help clinicians with their diagnoses, maybe help patients be able to get treated better and faster or whatnot. So over the past few years, there's been a lot of hype and excitement around it. But the reality is it's been a little bit of a challenge for healthcare to actually adopt artificial intelligence. And there's been several different stumbling blocks that have really kind of prevented AI from being predominantly used across all different aspects of healthcare. But certainly at the same time, there are certain things where AI is already playing a prominent role in some aspects of healthcare. So everything from how we interact with clinicians to how certain exams are being done on patients, AI is already assisting in those areas. A great example is a patient who might go in for like an MRI of the shoulder, for example, because maybe they've injured it from playing sports or whatnot. There's artificial intelligence built into that MRI scanner that's automatically recognizing the anatomical structure or the anatomical landmarks of where that shoulder is, so that it automatically properly positions the patient for that MRI exam. So simple things like that, which that maybe you and I take for granted because we have those same technologies in our personal lives with like our cell phones being able to recognize people and recognize smiles on faces or whatnot. We're applying those same technologies now in the healthcare space to start look at anatomical structures.
Right, and in that example, it's almost transparent to the patient, right? They're not necessarily even aware that AI is contributing there.
Exactly. So there's been a lot of great strides today in terms of artificial intelligence being embedded into some aspects of healthcare. So whether it's that MRI example, or again, the way that you interact to get to your clinician, to your doctor, to your specialist, a lot of that is driven by artificial intelligence today.
You mentioned there in the beginning a little bit about the challenges in adopting AI in healthcare. Could you sort of expand a little bit upon that and what some of these challenges are?
Yeah, absolutely. I think initially there was a lot of concern about AI taking over a lot of clinical processes within healthcare. So a lot of concern where clinicians were saying, oh no, the computer is going to now become the doctor, and it's going to diagnose my patients and everything, and this is not a good thing or whatnot. And so there was a lot of concern about AI replacing a lot of the role of healthcare. Now today, the challenge is not is the AI going to replace the doctor, but really how does the AI and technologies like these, how do they get integrated into the routine clinical workflow for that clinician? So how does the doctor actually integrate the information that artificial intelligence is generating? And how can that physician use that information to maybe make a more informed diagnostic decision or maybe a more personalized treatment decision for that particular patient? And the challenge today for vendors like Siemens Healthineers and others is really how do we create the technologies that don't be so intrusive into the way that clinicians are conducting their healthcare, but then assist them or actually be a companion for that clinician to support them in their diagnosis or treatment of their patients. And so the clinical integration of artificial intelligence into that routine clinical workflow is a real critical step here, and one that folks are now just starting to address, and that's going to help with the increased adoption of AI going forward. Another area, Andrew, where I think it's been a little bit of a struggle as well is around kind of how these AI algorithms are developed. In many cases, these AI algorithms are developed by feeding a set amount of clinical data or healthcare data into an algorithm to train that algorithm. So we might say, okay, let's feed the algorithm a million images of this lung nodule, and then after we train that with a million images, a million pictures of this lung nodule, after a million of them, the AI is going to say, oh, this is a lung nodule. I can see that when I look at this picture. And that's fantastic. Great way of training the algorithm. The challenge is that, as you and I both know, is that when you put that algorithm in practice, there's differences in the patient population that you're trying to apply that algorithm to. And so the population that you might have, let's say in Western Europe or the United States, might be completely different than you would have, let's say in Southeast Asia or in Africa or South America. And in many cases, that algorithm that you've trained that has you know, maybe some implicit bias that's built into that because you've actually trained it with maybe a cohort of studies or images that only reflect one portion of our global population. And that becomes then a struggle when you try to take that same algorithm and apply it to these different parts of the world. And so that's also created a lot of hesitancy from clinicians to say, hey, do I really trust that AI to be able to address what my patient population needs to be looked at? So that's another barrier as well to AI. And I think the third one is really, again, the how these AI algorithms are developed. So if we go back to that example of looking at lung nodules, it's great that I've trained the AI system to identify or recognize the pattern of here's a lung nodule, but is the AI actually telling me anything that would be helpful in terms of making that diagnosis or that treatment for that patient? So why did it say that this is a nodule? What was the rationale behind that? You know, what was it looking for? I think having a little more openness in terms of how the AI is actually deriving its solution will give more comfort to the end user to be able to be more willing to accept the results of the artificial intelligence. So having that kind of transparency or visibility to how the AI is making certain clinical determinations is going to be critical in terms of overall AI adoption by the healthcare clinician.
Yeah, so that element of explainability and transparency, as you said, can then support further confidence in the clinician that they understand, you know, how it arrived at that decision.
Exactly right, Andrew. So if you think about it, this will not only help with today's clinicians and how they adopt artificial intelligence. But if you think about the future doctors that we have and the future clinicians within healthcare who are more apt to accepting technology and accepting concepts like artificial intelligence, if we can also provide the education on how AI actually has made this clinical determination, that's going to be easier than for that next generation of clinical leaders to be able to have more faith or trust into that AI solution.
Yeah, and then going back to your point about algorithms being trained on geographically local data sets, and you know that having an impact on bias within the model, right? Are there steps that we can do to address that element of it in terms of perhaps, you know, finding ways that we can have more comprehensive data sets? I know that there's quite a bit of regulation and privacy concerns around combining data, but is there some ways we can address that challenge?
Yeah, it's a great point, Andrew, and I think that's one of the aspects that we pride ourselves on here at Siemens Healthineers, being that global organization that we are. We also realize as we develop AI algorithms that we need to be able to address the different patient populations that we serve. So the AI algorithms that we've created, let's say on finding that chest nodule for the populations like in Western Europe and North America or whatnot, we've actually retrained that same algorithm with data sets that we found in Asia to be able to clinically release our AI algorithms in the Asia markets for us. So for us, we really leverage the fact that we're a global organization to have that rich mixture of data sets to be able to train our different AI algorithms. So I think that's an important aspect, is making sure you have that diverse population reflected in the data that you're using to train the AI algorithms themselves. I think the other piece that's important, and one that organizations like ourselves and other folks within the industry are starting to realize, is that once you've created that AI algorithm, we've got to continuously retrain that algorithm. So that today, you know, that algorithm might be trained with this subset of, you know, a million studies or whatever the case may be, but it needs to be actually a continuously learning system, so that as it's encountering new pieces of data, it's using that information to continue to enhance or improve the AI algorithm itself. And that's something that we see as an important aspect to really having an algorithm that's fine-tuned for the clinical population that you're looking at. And that's a piece of science, an area that us in particular here at Siemens Healthineers are very keen on, in terms of making sure that we have that algorithm that accurately reflects the patient population we're applying it towards.
Right, so it's almost having sort of a closed loop, right? That it's continuously updating, continuously learning the more and more patients that it sees in that particular setting.
Yep, you're absolutely right. By having kind of that closed loop, or that kind of self-learning system or self-trained type of system going forward, that will always ensure that you'll have kind of a continuously improving AI algorithm going forward that, again, accurately reflects the patient population you're dealing with.
And so, you know, on that, do you see, how do you see the role of health regulatory bodies in this element of, you know, application of AI in the clinical setting? Do you think that they can help to further it or help in other ways?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you need to have guardrails around the development of these AI algorithms and addressing some of these topics that we talked about, Andrew, like implicit bias that's built into how these algorithms are created or whatnot. But the regulation also needs to be able to accommodate the ability to support this kind of continuous learning aspect that we just mentioned, and today that's a little bit of a struggle, because today we as algorithms that are submitted to regulatory bodies are kind of done in a batch mode, if you will. So we've trained the algorithm with X number of studies. It's found to have good accuracy. So now we're going to go ask that we can use this in the clinical setting. Now, if you want to then improve on that algorithm and make it better by maybe training it or doing some of this learning, continuous learning that we talked about, then it has to go through another submission process as well to get reapproved, if you will, for kind of that patient or clinical use. So there are opportunities there to maybe improve that process to be able to support the localization of these different AI algorithms to meet the specific patient populations that it's serving. But nonetheless, it's still very important to kind of have some regulatory guidance around the development of these algorithms, because I think one piece that is also maybe inhibiting the overall adoption is, as we talked about, it's one thing to have the algorithm be able to use pattern recognition and identify something like, oh, this is a lung nodule or whatnot. But where AI is going to have more value for the clinician is if the artificial intelligence can provide some guidance to the clinician as to, let's say, the severity of that lung nodule, or maybe what should be done next for that patient there. That's gonna increase the value, increase the adoption for the end user in terms of artificial intelligence. The challenge behind that then is making sure that you have some regulation that provides guidance as to how those determinations are made by the AI itself. And that's where we're going to need help and guidance from regulatory bodies or experts in this area to be able to help the clinician understand why the AI is making a certain determination or decision.
Yeah, and do you feel as though the regulatory environment is catching up in that regard?
Yeah, I think I think just like the industry as a whole, just like as clinicians or vendors or whatnot, is we're all continuously learning in this particular space. And I think from a regulation standpoint, they're also continuously learning as well and trying to adopt and figure out what are the right ways that we can create guardrails for this type of technology, but at the same time still allow the flexibility to kind of be creative here to meet some of the different clinical needs that we have for patients and for the clinicians.
Do you see any other possibilities in terms of, you know, addressing some of the potential risks or limitations of AI?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think if we go back to this challenge of adoption here and where AI has the most value, Andrew. So certainly, you know, AI built into devices at the point of data acquisition is great. So like we talked about, the ability to identify that MRI of the shoulder, that's great stuff. AI to be able to find that lung nodule, that's great. That's great as well, and significant, you know, could be significant at least from in terms of helping the clinician. But where we at Siemens Healthineers see the opportunity for AI is really being able to use AI beyond just one clinical discipline here. And so the ability to say for that clinician, let's not just look at that lung nodule that you saw in that chest CT exam, but let's also look at the data coming from the patient's laboratory results. Let's look at the data coming from the patient's pathology results, or even let's look at the genomic data of that patient. And then if you could layer artificial intelligence on top of all those pieces of disparate data that's out there about this patient, and maybe have the AI find correlations in all those different data points, then you might be, as a clinician, be able to make a maybe more informed diagnostic decision about that patient, or maybe a more personalized treatment decision for that patient. So a great example, Andrew, might be that you know, a male comes in with prostate, you know, diagnosed with prostate cancer, and the urologist says, oh, you know, I've trained my whole life, you know, tackling prostate cancer. This is no different. And the typical, you know, the way we treat prostate cancer is to give that that patient, you know, 3 bouts of radiation therapy a week for the next 10 weeks. And so they put the patient on that particular treatment plan. Now, what if you could actually instead look at that patient, look at maybe images of the patient's prostate cancer, look at maybe the patient's laboratory results, maybe look at the pathology behind that prostate cancer, maybe even look at the genetic results of that patient, and then have AI actually analyze all that and maybe have an output that says, wait a second, you know, for this particular patient, because of his genetic makeup, because of the way he's, you know, his lab results look, he actually doesn't need 3 bouts of radiation therapy every week. He actually only needs 2 bouts of radiation therapy every week, and he can get it all done in 5 weeks instead of 10 weeks. That's where we see the opportunity for artificial intelligence going forward, is to actually drive maybe more personalized treatment decisions for that patient. So if I can get all these different pieces of disparate data and leverage the computing power to find all those correlations that I'm looking for, then I could actually make that more personalized treatment decision, that more informed diagnostic decision for that patient that actually says, oh, wait, this is not, we don't need to treat them the standard way. We can actually treat this person, you know, based on what their clinical makeup is, based on all this data that we've received. That's where the opportunity is for AI, is really to drive that concept of personalized medicine.
Right. Based upon sort of that holistic, comprehensive view of the patient, by merging all those different sources of data together into one sort of digital platform, if you will.
Yep, exactly right, Andrew. And you could even take it a step further. So let's say if I've successfully treated that one male that I had, that prostate cancer patient, because we've used AI to kind of make that more personalized treatment decision, make that more informed diagnostic decision. Now I could actually then go back to my patient population, and I could go look at that patient population, and I can say, let me look at all the other males out there who had maybe a similar lab results as my patient that I successfully treated. Or let me look at all the patients who had a similar genomic results or something, similar genomic types as that particular patient. And then if I apply now that same treatment to that smaller cohort of patients who had similarities here, I might actually be able to have a higher success rate in terms of treating that particular patient. So there, if you think about it, Andrew, that's really true population health management. Yeah. So now I'm really kind of looking at leveraging the data and everything I learned, and with the guidance and the computing power of artificial intelligence, I can actually now go to my patient population, find specific cohorts where of patients that fit a certain profile, and then be able to maybe with higher outcomes take care of that specific cohort of patients. And that's where, again, we see a lot of opportunity for technologies like artificial intelligence to come into play here, because there's a massive amount of clinical data that we're looking at, a massive amount of patient data that we need to digest here. So can we have the AI help us use that computing power, use the ability to find those correlations within those different pieces of data here to help us make that more informed diagnostic decision, that more personalized treatment decision for the patient?
Right. And then obviously, hopefully, you know, the knock on would be that then we would have better outcomes, right?
Exactly. Better outcomes, more consistent outcomes. Yeah. So topics like standardization and really trying to, you know, enhance and do value-based care. I mean, this is how technology is able to kind of drive those particular topics. It's by actually leveraging the technology to make those more informed decisions, both from a diagnostic and therapeutic standpoint.
So do you feel that we're on the cusp right now of, you know, a big shift in healthcare? I mean, how, a data-driven, AI-enabled shift in care delivery? And if so, like, how far away do you think we are from that vision?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we are on the cusp of a new way of integrating technology into healthcare. And I think you're starting to see, again, providers who are really taking a greater focus in clinical data, patient data that's happening going forward. You're seeing companies, you know, being able investing in technologies to try to harness and utilize this data to support those different clinical or operational decisions there. You're seeing patients who are now becoming more empowered to want to own more of their patient data, their patient history, and be able to use that information to help their clinician make those different decisions that they've got to make. So we're definitely on kind of this tipping point, if you will, Andrew, where folks are all realizing there's a wealth of data that's out there, clinical data that's out there. Now, can we leverage the computing power, the technologies like AI and others that are out there to be able to utilize all that clinical data to drive those clinical decisions that we're looking for going forward?
So we have this wealth of patient data to help drive better clinical decisions, but is there more that we could do with this data? Could we use it to reduce the impact on the patient and perhaps support wellness in general?
Certainly, I think as we talk about concepts of population health management, Andrew, you know, now if you think about it, if we have access then to all these different pieces of disparate clinical data here, and we're leveraging technology like artificial intelligence to pull all that data together and find correlations in all that data, we could actually start then to model the patient and actually, if you think about it, create a digital twin of the patient, or maybe a specific a digital twin of a patient's anatomy that we might be interested in looking at going forward. And why would we want to do something like this? If we can gather all the clinical data, and then of course it's a little more complicated because we have to bring in physiological data, you know, electrical data, see how that particular organ or how that particular patient might work. But if I could actually create a digital twin or a model of that patient or that patient's anatomy here, I could then start to test or try out different therapies or treatments for that particular ailment first to determine what is the most successful treatment for that individual patient. So here in the area, like here at Siemens Healthineers, we're looking in the area of different heart diseases here. And so things like tachycardia and some of the different irregulations that you might see within the heart, how can I treat those ailments in a digital twin environment before actually applying that treatment to the patient? So here I can actually try out different treatments and identify what is the optimal treatment for that patient before actually applying it to the patient themselves. And that's the excitement about technologies like artificial intelligence, is because I could actually create now these digital twins, be able to test on those digital twins, find that optimal treatment for the patient. And then if you take it even a step further from there, Andrew, you know, rather than talking about trying to find treatments for the patient, if I have this digital twin, let's actually go back to the front of the story and see if we can actually make sure we take care of the patient to avoid them having any sort of ailment, right? So now we're actually talking about wellness here and wellness healthcare, where we actually can simulate the way that maybe they change their diet, the way that they actually are exercising or whatever the case may be, and see how that digital twin reacts, and to be able to make sure that particular patient is always in a healthy state. So great opportunities again for the future that are all driven by technologies like artificial intelligence being able to help us not just harness all this data, but then find correlations within all this patient data. And we can then use that information again to make those different clinical and diagnostic decisions.
So Peter, how do you see sort of the payers in all of this, in terms of what sort of role do they have in terms of furthering patient wellness?
Yeah, it's actually good you bring up kind of that third leg of the stool there between the provider and the patient. The payers definitely have a significant interest and role with the emergence of artificial intelligence as well. We talked about earlier not only the ability for AI to help, you know, find that individual treatment for that individual patient. But as we talked about, we can then apply that to maybe a cohort of patients. So we could actually start to standardize the type of care that we deliver for the patient population. And that has significant interest for the payer community here. So if we can leverage AI and the ability here to kind of identify what is the best treatment for a particular cohort of patients, we're able then to go to the payer organizations and essentially give them a little bit of more confidence that certain types of treatments are going to be utilized with a high level of success. And I think that's where the payer community is going to be quite interested, is if they know that they're going to make an investment in the care for a particular patient, and they know that the outcome for that particular patient is going to be highly successful because it's based on data, you know, data-driven AI determinations. That's going to give them more confidence and willingness to be able to make sure that they take care of the patient as well. So strong interest from that third leg of the stool as well, to kind of see, hey, can we leverage technology? Can we leverage artificial intelligence to give us not only standards of care, but also higher outcomes for the patient population that they're taking care of?
Oh, that's really fascinating. Thank you. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Peter. I appreciate you coming on and talking to us today.
Yeah, appreciate it as well, Andrew. Lots of fun, and looking forward to continuing the dialogue.
To get more AI news and insights, visit our website at aibusiness.com. Until next time, thank you for listening.